Hey Rainbow, I was just talking to tell confessing to grandfather that I didn't practice very much this week. I'm wondering if you might step in and join kind of help in the language lesson. I would like to hear you two back and forth and teaching each other. Would you be
Well,
willing
he has
to do
to
that?
speak very slowly, and I am listening on my phone, and my hearing isn't really wonderful, so we can try.
Well, let's give it a try. I'll
Well,
step
how are
in
you,
too,
Trope?
but I would like to hear you guys communicate.
Well, how are you, Trope?
How are you, Rainbow?
Katamika.
I'm blurred. I didn't quite get it. Slowly.
Kata Mica.
Micah Cloche.
The late Cloche.
Micah.
Mica what?
I was just saying, how are you?
That's Katamika. And you said
Blossom.
cloche, which is good. And then I said delayed cloche, which is very good. You do realize that grandfather doesn't hear well either, right?
I do. I just ordered grandfather's a headset, headphones. I've been looking online, and they're supposed to really, even with a hearing aid, help. So we'll check that out, see how it does. If it does, maybe we'll get you a pair.
Oh, I need hearing aids.
A rainbow.
Okay. So
Micah.
I have to look at the last two lessons to find out which words that you used last week. But when I said Klahalia Chope, you all remember what chope is?
Grandfather. Yes, good for
Grandfather, right.
you. One for
Yeah.
you.
Like hope with a CH on it. Chope.
Oh, choke.
Yeah. Chope.
Chope. Chope.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we'll give it 2 more minutes to see if anybody else pops in.
Okay.
And then,
Rainbow. Micah Mamuk Nika
He says, Rainbow, you make my heart happy.
Tum Tum Kwan. Aww. Oh. Okay, we'll
And
start.
then I would say Nawitka, and that means indeed.
Yeah,
Nawitka. Nawitka.
Nawitka can mean indeed, yes,
Hi,
okay.
Certainly, you're damn right. A lot of words in jargon are what I call concept words. They cover an entire area. It isn't like chope is just grandfather. But when you get to words like tiki or tikeg, which I know that you've had already, which is I want, I like, I desire, then that covers a whole area of wanting something.
Excellent.
Rainbow delay close Klusman.
I'm a very good woman. Thank you. Mossy,
Oh my.
mossy.
And then notice I didn't say delayed Klusman, but delayed Klusman. Very close. Very close
Oh,
Klusman. The delay, the more longer I get it, the more emphasis puts on it. Instead of delayed, instead of real delayed. So very good.
Very good.
Now, this is another lesson in the language. You can sometimes give a little different meaning to the word just by the way you say it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we should get going here. I know I have a good language lesson coming up because I've got some professionals on my team tonight. So, welcome to what I am fairly sure is the seventh session of stories told by Grandfather Roy Wilson. The legend that is shared today will be followed by an interactive language lesson, and we'll open the mic so everyone can participate. So get your note cards and we'll learn some new words. Previously, we explored his beginnings in a cabin near the Yakima River and the ingenuity required to live as the Great Depression was just descending on America. As a very young child, the family moved to California where there was support for work and for the family. And we talked about a huge world event that had a profound effect on the shaping of Grandfather's life, and that being the bombing of Pearl Harbor and the resultant life change for Japanese Americans. Seeing his friends and schoolmates disappear into the internment camps was really difficult to understand for a young boy. In high school, he was guided toward a career in engineering, but during the last week or the week of his high school graduation, he was walking to the engineering department at his job at National Supply Company when he heard a voice calling his name. He looked around but saw no one. Then he realized the voice was coming from within. "Have you forgotten my call upon your life?" Then and there, he knew he would never be an engineer. Ministry has been a lifelong pursuit for Grandfather. He recalls as a young boy sharing his story with the city garbage men as they worked their way down the street. At 11, he and his brother Ray would hold a service in the field near their house. The kids would show up to play ball, and before they played, Ray would lead them in song, and then Roy would step onto an orange crate and deliver the message. In 1944, he graduated from high school at age 16, and within 2 months, he entered the Assembly of God Bible Institute in Springfield, Missouri. The school had a program that allowed students to pastor a church while studying. Grandfather was assigned to a church in Forsyth, Missouri. The service was held in a courtroom of the county courthouse, and he began with a congregation of three. That was a difficult time for young Grandfather, as he had to rely on his faith to build the congregation. On a summer trip home to California, he met Martha and decided to transfer to Southern California Bible College. Roy and Martha were married in October 1949, and Grandfather soon became pastor for a circuit of three churches: Sunny Valley Community Church, Shawn Creek Community Church, and the Gallus Community Church. Always being a reader, he made a habit of reading 52 books a year. That love of learning led him to continue his education at Southern Oregon State College of Education, where he took psychology and education to benefit the ministry. From there, he continued his education while pastoring a church in Spokane, where his focus changed from a theology degree to a Bachelor of Science, then to a liberal arts degree. The Methodist Church requires a Master's of Divinity degree ordained to be ordained as a church elder, and grandfather attended the St. Paul School of Theology in Kansas City, Missouri, the most memorable school of his education. He describes his education as more of a shotgun blast over the field of knowledge, rather than the more narrow rifle shot experience of people who remained in one field of education. And with that, let's welcome Grandfather Roy. Thank you, Grandfather, and welcome. Take it away.
My good family. Well, we'll start with our legend. Up until now, all the legends I have told you have been Cowlitz tribal legends, my own tribe. And there are many more of those from my tribe to tell you. But tonight, I'm going to tell you a legend from the Blackfeet tribe, who live on a very large reservation in Montana. This legend is about the elk dog. What in the world is an elk dog? Well, here comes the story. Once in the long ago time, there were two children, a boy and a girl, brother and sister. They were orphans. And the boy, the people of the village, they just felt he was nothing but a bunch of trash because he was deaf. And when, since he was deaf, he couldn't understand anything they were saying to him. So they said, he's unwitted, he's dumb, he's crazy, he's a nitwit. So he was completely ignored. In fact, he wasn't even allowed to be in the village. They kept chasing him out. But his daughter, his sister, was a very smart, wise girl, very sharp, intelligently, and a beautiful girl. Whereas the boy, her brother, was not only forsaken by all the village, even his own relatives, they rejected him. But his sister loved him dearly. And consequently, she could go into the village and the people there would feel sorry for her with being an orphan. They would give her plenty of food and she'd take it back and share it with her brother. So they fared okay, even though they lived outside of the village. But one day, some people visited their village from a different Indian village, and they fell in love with that girl. And they took her with them back to their village. They adopted her as their daughter. And now he was left all alone. He had no one to bring him food, and he was not allowed in the village. All he could do was be like a scavenger dog. He was scavenger for what he could get. He'd find the scraps of old food that the people in the village would throw to the dogs, and he'd get that. At night, he would find his sleep in an old rotten canoe with grass that he had put in there to lie on as a bed. Life was real hard for him. But then it got worse, for the game for the hunters was being all gamed out. And there was no greens again now for the women, the herbs for the women to gather. So they decided to move the village to another location. So they loaded up all of their gear, their teepees and everything on the travois that their dogs pulled. And they left and they told him, you cannot come with us. They threw their hands at him, you stay here. So they left. He went for 2 days, and he was getting very, very hungry. And he decided, whether they want me or not, I've got to go find them. I've got to at least live on their scraps. So the trail was very well marked, because all of the dogs pulling those travois, those poles on the travois, were making marks in the dirt and the soil. So he had a good trail to follow. By the time on his way, he was crying. He was weeping so hard that he could hardly see where he was going. And he stumbled and fell, and he heard a loud snap in his left ear. and a worm-like thing popped out. And for the first time in his life, he could hear, he heard out of that ear, the birds singing. Oh, he had never heard that sound before. Oh, he was so happy. And now he was weeping for joy. As he started running, he tripped again. And there was a loud snap and pop in his right ear. And a worm-like thing come popping out of that ear. Now he had perfect hearing. He could even hear the rushing of the water in the creek nearby. Oh, he was so happy. He continued his journey and he caught up with where they had camped, their new camp. And the men were all out hunting. There was the chief, Good Runner, and an old man, and he was butchering out a buffalo that he had just killed when the Long Arrow came up. That was the boy's name that his parents had given him. And Good Running saw Long Arrow, and he says, oh, there's that good-for-nothing boy, but there's something different about him. We've been mistaken the way we have treated him. Oh, he began feeling sorry for him. He called him up and he said, here, and he gave him a piece of the hump of the buffalo to eat. Then he gave him some other good pieces of the buffalo to eat. And he said, the people of this village have been very wrong the way they've treated you. I'm going to adopt you as my grandson. I'm going to take you home with me. And so he did. They walked into the teepee and the chief's wife, she says, what are you doing with this good for nothing, dumb-witted, crazy kid? And the Good Runner, he said, oh, this is a great good boy. He's a very good boy. And I'm adopting him as my grandson. And he doesn't have any good moccasins on there. It's like walking barefoot in what he's got on. Make him some new moccasins. She started to reject the whole thing. He said, you better do what I'm doing. You're going to be in trouble. So she did it. And she prepared good meals for him. Well, as time went on, Good Runner, the old chief, he says, I'm going to train you. I'm going to teach you how to talk. And I'm going to teach you how to hunt, and I'm going to teach you all the things that a boy needs to be taught to be a good man in the village. And the boy, he Long Arrow, he learned so quickly. It wasn't long, and he was the head of all the other boys. Everything he did was better than they could. He grew up to be a young man, and he still was being totally rejected by everybody else in the village, even his own relatives. It was only the old chief and his wife, who now had learned to like him, that had any association with him. So Long Arrow, he said to his adopted grandfather, you have been so good to me. I want to do something great to honor you. Good Runner, he said, you've already done things great. You've become the best hunter in the village. You've been the best of everything around here. You've already done something great. Oh, I want to do something really great. Tell me what that can be. Well, Good Runner, paused, he thought considerably on this. Finally, he spoke and said, well, I don't know if I should tell you this. I probably shouldn't, because I don't want to lose you. But there is a story that way down south of us, there are some elk dogs. We've never seen an elk dog, but we've heard stories about them. And every fourth generation, we've sent a young man from our village to go find the elk dogs and bring some elk dogs back to us. And never once did a single one of those young men ever return. We never saw them again. And I'm afraid if you went, I'd never see you again. Long Arrow, he said, I will do it, and I'll come back, and I'll bring the Ugg Dogs back to you. Well, Grandfather said, you're going to have to be prepared first. We're going to have to take you into the lodge and give you some good medicine, teach you the ways of the pipe, and teach you the songs and prayers that you need to know. And so they went into the training process for the journey. One morning, real early, when the rest of the village was all asleep, Grandfather made a travoy and put it on the boys on Long Arrow's dog, loaded a packet that they, with all the things that the boy would need, food of all kinds, and so, and sent him off with his prayers. Well, Long Arrow went south for 4 days walking, and he came to a small pond. There was a man standing by the pond. He was the spirit of that pond. And the man saw Long Arrow and he says, and what are you doing here? He says, I'm journeying down to see if I can find the elk dog. The man said to him, well, I can't help you there. But I will say that if you go 4 days times 4 days, you'll come to a lake, and there will be a man there, and he might tell you how you can find the elk dogs, and he might not. And with that, the man disappeared into the waters of the lake. As the first man had disappeared in the waters of the pond, for he was the spirit of the lake. Well, Long Arrow went over high mountains and down through deep canyons, and he was wearing his moccasins out, going 4 days and 4 nights. And finally, he came to a large lake. And there was a giant of a man, a very wicked-looking man, a fiercely-looking man. He was twice the height of any normal man. And he had a great, large staff with a sharp obsidian spear point on it. He fiercely looked at Long Arrow and he said, what are you doing here? Long Arrow said, I'm on my way to find the elk dog. Aren't you afraid of me? No, I'm not afraid of you. With that, the old big giant of a man, he kind of smirked and had a smirkish smile. And he said, I've never met anybody else who isn't afraid of me. I like young fellows that are not afraid of me. And I'll tell you, you go 4 days times 4 days, and you'll come to a lake much, much larger than this. And there, you may find Grandfather himself. And he may respond to you, and he may not even let you see him. He may give you what you're looking for, and he may not. And with that, the giant of a man disappeared into his lake. He was the spirit of the lake. Oh, poor Long Arrow, he even had higher mountains to climb, and up into the snow and down into deep canyons, and it was a very tiresome journey, 4 days and 4 nights. And then he came to this big, the largest lake he had ever seen. He was tired. He lay down on the nice grass and fell asleep. It was late the next morning when he awakened. Sun was shining bright. And there in front of him stood a beautiful, gorgeous young boy. And the boy said to him, we have been expecting you. We've been waiting for you for a long time. And Grandfather is waiting for you in his lodge to welcome you. If follow me. Then the boy turned into a kingfisher and dove into the waters of the lake and disappeared down into the waters of the lake. Long Arrow kept looking at that and said, how can I follow him? I'll drown. I can't do that. And then he said, well, I've already lost my life and come in here this far, so I might as well go ahead. He stepped into the water, and when he stepped into the waters parted, and he was on sand, and it went down, 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 down a long slope till he got to the bottom, and he wasn't wet. The waters had parted, and there was the most fantastic, awesome lodge that he had ever seen. It was immense. And there was the young boy. And he says, come in, grandfather's waiting to meet you. And so they went in. Oh, Long Arrow was in awe with all that he saw. He had never seen so many bows and arrows and all kinds of things, robes, clothes that were filled with quill, different colored quill work on the leather clothes. It was awesome, awesome. And grandfather said, you must be hungry. And he ordered his wife to get food for Long Arrow. And then they smoked the pipe. And finally he said, I want you to go on outside with my boy and see what we've got here. So they went out, and there were the elk dogs, a whole herd of them, whinnying and neighing, their manes flowing, their tails flying in the wind. And the pretty boy, he leapt up on one and flew like the wind, riding it. And after he got through with that, he came back and says, now you climb on it and you ride it. And so Long Arrow, he had a fantastic ride of his life. How fast that elk dog went. When they got off, they did that for a number of days. After 4 days, after that first ride, the little pretty boy, he said to Long Arrow, now, while you are here, I want you to watch Grandfather. You notice he's wearing a robe. It goes all the way to the ground. You cannot see his feet. But keep close watch, because if you ever can get a glance of his feet, then he will have to give you a gift of whatever you ask for. Well, that went on for 4 days, and he kept watching Grandfather all the time, but he could never see his feet. It was on the fourth morning, and Grandfather was leaving his lodge, and the big flap on the doorway of the lodge caught his robe, and it flew open. Long Arrow, his mouth fell open. His eyes got big, because what he was seeing was not a human leg or human foot. It was the leg and foot of an elk dog. His mouth had fallen open. Grandfather realized what had happened. He looked down and saw the robe was showing that he had the legs and feet of an elk dog. And okay, now you've seen what I have here. Well, before that had happened, when the pretty boy told him that you can ask for whatever you want, you want to be sure and ask for three certain things. You'll want to ask for his black robe. You'll want to ask him for his belt, which is made up of many colored quills. And you'll want to ask then for a few elk dogs. Well, when the chief said, the old grandfather said, okay, you can ask for what you want, and don't feel like you just asked for something small. You can go ahead and ask for whatever you want. Well, Long Earl said, I want all of your herd of elk dogs. And I want your black robe, and I want your belt. And the old grandfather looked at him, oh, you're not afraid to ask for what you want, are you? He said, well, I'll give you the black robe, and I will give you the belt, but I'll only give you half of the herd. I'll share half of it with you, because I need to have for myself. And then I'm going to give you something you didn't ask for. And he pulled out this big rope, this long rope that was made from the hair of a white buffalo. Now he said, when you leave here and head back home with your half of my herd of elk dogs, you wear this black robe. As long as you're wearing the black robe, the elk dogs will follow you. If you take it off, they'll return. Do not look back. And if you do not look back, on the fourth day, the elk dogs will come up on your left. Whenever you want to catch one to ride it, you take this rope of the white buffalo hair and you can use it to catch it and you can ride it. Well, Long Arrow, he returned back and his dog was so happy to see him. But now the dog didn't have to pull the travois, or the travois was on one of the elk dogs. And of course, by now you know what it is. It's a horse. And it could carry a much heavier load than his dog would have been able to carry. And the grandfather would load him with all kinds of food and stuff. He made the long journey back. He never looked back. The horses, the elk dogs came up to him. He finally got home. As he approached the village, the people had never seen anything this big, except like an elk, but never seen anybody riding something like this. And they were frightened. They all ran and hid. But Long Arrow, he called out, Grandfather, it's me. Grandfather recognized his voice. Oh, he was delighted. He came running out. The rest of the village all came out. And Long Arrow told him about the whole trip. And now he said, we don't have to take many long days making our trips to different places. We can ride our herd. We can use them to ride and chase the buffalo and kill the buffalo. And his grandfather was so happy, and the whole village now accepted him, and he had honored grandfather. And he gave all the herd to grandfather except for two. He said, I'll just keep two so I can develop my own herd. End of story. Oh, now what does this legend tell us that's told by the Blackfeet Indians? Well, of course, you know, first of all, it's their story and how they got the horse that they had. What is interesting about that, in the legend, he had to go south to find the lake where the horse was, the elk dog. And it's from the south that the horse came to us. There were no horses here until the Spaniards, after Columbus Day, the Spaniards invaded the Central America area, the Mayans and the Incas. And after they had conquered them, then the black robes, the priests, the Catholic priests, they came with soldiers on up into what is now Southern California and Arizona, New Mexico, and started establishing their missions. And they brought the Spanish soldiers with them, with their horses. And down in the Arizona area, the Indians many times would raid a village that was established by the priests and the soldiers. And the Apache were the best at raiding. They were fierce warriors. They would wait at night and they would strike at the very outside circle of the village. That was the easiest part to rob horses from. They became great horse people and they traded their horses to the people in the north. So this fits the Blackfeet story. And other major lessons to be learned from this is the lesson of perseverance. The gold, the Blackfeet gold, which would be the elk dog, what is it you need in your life? You don't give up like those who every four generations were going before Long Arrow gave up. They saw that they, how can I go into the lake? Sometimes you have to push yourself to the point where you think, this is going to do me in, but you persevere and you will be a winner. You will have a great life. It's a great story. It has some very valuable lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you have any questions you want to ask about that legend?
That was great, Grandfather. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
So, yeah, let's open it up for questions about the legend, and then we will, I'll move it on to the language lesson.
So, okay.
That was a long lesson. And perseverance is something that I need to hold on to right now, is to persevere, not give up, try it more than once. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome, Penny. I would say this, that sometimes the test of life, you may be being tested right now. We all get our tests. And you persevere. It just reminds me of something I saw on the TV this morning at 9 o'clock in the morning on channel 233. This is the game channel. Is a Deal or No Deal. And the man that was playing it was a retired military general. Now, if he was a general, he had 40 years in the service. And so he was trying to go in that Deal or No Deal to gain the $1 million. But he got down where those $1 million hadn't gone away yet. But all that was left were some very low numbers. Like the biggest one was like $1,000. And he got up to the place where he had either $99,000 and he could check out and take that, or he could try for the $1 million, and if he lost the million, the best he'd ever be able to get would be $1,000. He gave up. He took the $99,000. The name of the case that he would have got if he went all the way, it was the $1 million. He had a chance this morning to get $1 million, and he gave up because became a chicken. Well, persevere. And I couldn't help think, what kind of an army general is this guy? If we generals that give up before we win the war, you got to save your life to win the war. And he gave up. I'm not sure how good he'd been as a general in the military if he gives up just for $99,000. Oh, yeah, that's a lot of money.
But well, that's the lesson I needed to hear. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Good.
There are some times when I feel like giving up, and I had some of those times this week. So thanks a lot. That made a big difference in my day.
Thank you. Mossy.
Does anyone have any questions before we turn it over to the language lesson? I see a hand there in Tom's area.
I noticed, Grandfather, that in the story, there were a multitude of the number four.
Yes. Four is a very powerful sacred number in our Indian world. Why? Because it's the number of the four directions, the number of the four winds, the number of the power of the universe. For if you turn and make your prayers to the Creator in the east, and in the south, and then the west, and then the north, you've sent your power, your prayer to the Creator throughout the entire universe. There are many ways of looking at lessons in the number four. I could take probably another half hour here, and I'm not going to do that. But I'll just give you one story that emphasizes the power of the four. I was called to a session one time. This is about 30, 40 years ago. About 40 years ago. When it was a gathering of, there were about 14 of us, Indian medicine or shaman. And our purpose in meeting, being called together, was to discuss as spiritual leaders, what can we do to help our Indian people with this problem of alcoholism? For it has destroyed many of our people. And as we gathered that day in this big circle, one of the men, he said, before we get started here today, I got to get something off my heart or I will be no good for this discussion. They said, well, go ahead, what is it? He said, I'm very, very, very upset with one of the men in this circle here. It was me he was upset with. And he really ripped me up one way and the other. What was his problem? He didn't like it because I was giving Indian teachings to non-Indian people. That was a no-no for him. And he went on for about 20 minutes, just ripping me up one side and the other, telling me every reason why I was not being a good Indian. And finally, as he said his piece, and he said, that's it, now I've got it off. Before I responded, the man next to me is Steve Old Coyote, a Suquamish Indian. And he was there. He was sitting next to me. He reached over and tapped me on the shoulder, put up his finger to his mouth. Shh, shh. Then he whispered, let me speak for you. I was very glad to have somebody else speak for me. He was a good friend of the man that had just really torn me up. And he said, my friend, you believe in the medicine wheel? Well, that guy thought, he more or less just said, this is weird that you would ask that. You know I believe in the medicine wheel. Well, do you believe you're more powerful than the wheel, or the wheel's more powerful than you? Well, you know that I believe the wheel has the greater power. What are you getting at? He said, well, take a look at the wheel. The four directions. We're back to that four again that we were asking about, Tom. And he said, notice, the wheel, the direction in the east is yellow. The direction in the south is white. The direction in the west is black. And the direction in the west is red. Oh, so the yellow man, the white man, the black man, and the red man. The wheel covers all colors. Now, if you believe it only belongs, the teachings only belong to the red man, then you have to get rid of three-fourths of the medicine power. The Creator gave us the medicine wheel saying, this is for all nations, for all people. You know, a few years ago, I'd have agreed with you and being upset with Roy, and now I'm believing he is the only one of all of us that's really saying what needs to be said, and we need to join with him to take the medicine wheel, our Indian Bible, to the whole world. But again, that's just one of many more. I could give you many other lessons on this number four, but it is a powerful, sacred number to the Indian people.
Wow. Good question, Tom. Thank you. Thank you, Grandfather.
Well, I appreciate your questions because many times your questions bring out teachings.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Valuable than anything I said in my talk prior to the questions.
They do. They absolutely do. I don't see any more questions. Anyone else?
Yes.
Hildy has a question. Let's go.
Okay.
It's not a question. I wanted you to know, Penny, that I have two books, The Sacred Science of Numbers.
I couldn't quite get that. Penny, can you tell me what she was asking?
Just a minute, Hildy. She has The Sacred Science of Numbers book. And what's the other one, Hildy?
Your days are numbered.
Your days are numbered.
Your days are numbered.
Yeah, well, the creator numbers our days. As the Bible says, even he knows the number of the hairs on your head. The creator, if I go back to my Indian world, in Indian teaching, Hayasakali Tai, the great chief of the above, knows all things. An important part here is to notice the difference between the creator and you and I. We say that the creator or God or the great spirit is infinite and we are finite. So if I were to ask you, can you give me a good written description of God or the creator or the great spirit? I've had people say, yes, I think I can. And I look at them and say, how can a finite describe the infinite? All we can do is give a finite description of the creator. We find that the infinite one is like in this thing we call time. Time is a man-made creation. God does not live in an era of time. For us, time means there's a beginning and an ending. In the infinite one, the eternal one, there's no beginning and no ending. So what we could picture, the creator, the great spirit, or God, sitting on an arch, the top of an arch, over all of man's historical time. And the God sees the events that happened thousands of years ago and can see the events that we have never yet seen that are still off thousands of years in the future, and sees the whole thing in one glance. Infinite.
Thank you.
Back to the numbering of our years. Numbering years is a man thing. The creator knows all this, that this is numbered. And this thing of being able to see the past and the future all at the one time reminds me of the many prophets in the Bible, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and the many others. In our Indian world, many prophets have made prophecies of things that were yet to come. Isaiah prophesies of events that took place several hundred years later, even to the extent, for example, given the name Cyrus of the Persian king who destroyed Babylon and the Babylonian Empire. What was happening was that the creator was speaking through the prophet, the creator who could see things that Isaiah could never see 100, 400 years later that was going to happen, and even to the extent of saying how it would happen. This whole thing is that the infinite dwells in the finite, you and I.
Thank you.
For all that, maybe it's time to go to the language.
Just 1 minute. I wanted to ask Hildy, did you want to say something about those books, Hildy?
Yes, I did.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm very willing to give them to you for you to take a breeze through it.
I would love that.
I studied the fact of numbers mattering in your life. And it's very interesting.
Okay.
Maybe I could take them to church and I'll just leave them in that.
I would appreciate that. This is very new to me. Thank you for the question, Tom. And thank you for the responses. So at this point, I suppose we should go on over to our language lesson.
Okay, so before you do that, Penny.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time hearing what she was saying. I think it was important. I'd like to know what it was.
Hildy has two books that she wants to share with us that has to do with the Tom's question and the value of numbers. So she will bring them to the church and we can look at them there.
Numerology is an important part of all the cultures in the world that I know of. And numerology can vary. For example, in the Bible, the number 7 is the number of completion, perfection. Whereas the number for completion and perfection in the Kalis world, that their numerology is the number 5. So the numbers will vary, but when you study them, and I think her books would be a great blessing to us, you get the viewpoints from many cultures, and they all can have something important to say.
Exactly. As we start our language lesson, I'm going to step out for just a minute because I just got a low battery signal on my computer. So if Rainbow and Grandfather can start out with the language lesson, I will be right back.
Okay, what I'm going to start with is, and I'll bring Rainbow in here in a few minutes. I hope that you are making those 3x5 cards and using them. They will be a great, great blessing to you and help you in learning the language. Then as I gave the assignment, if you don't know what I'm talking about, give me a call on the phone and I'll talk to you. The next item I want to bring out is, I would like to suggest to all of you who, and I believe all of you have been writing these words down on paper, I want you to go to your computer as soon as we get through with this session. Go to your document file and create a new document, a Chinook Jargon or Chinook Wawa. You can name it either one for to get into. Put everything that you've already been given. I've given you the 7 pronouns. Put them in your document. What I'm going to give you this evening, put this in your document file. And then you've got it right there where you can look at it and read it and study it as well as having one of my books. What I'm going to give you tonight, instead of just one word at a time like I've been giving, I want to give you a list of 22 words. These 22 words are the most commonly used words. They are used over and over and over. Entire conversations can just come with using very few other words with these words. These words are the main core words of the language. And so I'll read them to you slowly. I'll give you the spelling of the word, and then I'll tell you what the word means. And there may be times that Rainbow wants to step in and say something about a word that I give to you. And this will be the main core of tonight. And what I want you to do, once you put those into your computer, or take your paper that you're writing on tonight, do me a favor. Just simply read the list once every day. Once every day. You may think at first, Grandfather, 22 words, that's too many words to try and memorize. I'm not going to ask you to memorize. I'm asking you just to read them. And what's going to happen if you read the list I went through and once every day, all of a sudden you realize you remember what you read. You have memorized it without something attempting to memorize. We learn by using. We learn by using, and we lose by not using. And so I will again begin giving you this list. I'll read it from my own book that I built and wrote on the language.
So if you're grandfather?
Yes.
Just so you know, we're about 10 minutes to 7.
We're about 10 minutes to 7?
Yes. So maybe
wouldn't want to miss the wheel.
My storytelling, it took a little longer time in our conversation.
That was perfect. That was nice.
If I'm a little late for my show, you are more important. I want to give you the list even if I'm late for my show.
All right.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
You are the important ones. So you got your pen and paper ready. 22 words, the common, most common words. The first one is Chaco. C. Chaco. Yeah, Chaco. C H A K O. Chaco. Chaco.
Chaco Canyon.
That means to come or become. Come or become. We will go more into those later as we begin using them. Well, Thursday, I'll begin giving you some phrases, short phrases, and you'll find some of these words in them, but you'll actually be able to communicate with the phrases. And I'll just begin giving you a few of those at a time. The second word, cultus, C-U-L-T-U-S, cultus, which means useless or worthless. The next word is delate, D as in dog, E, L, A, T, E, delate. That's one of my used a little earlier this evening with Rainbow, and when I made it real long, delate. This can mean true, straight, very, words along that concept. The next one, Klahone, spelled K-L-A-H-A-N-I-E. This means outside or outdoors. The next one is one that you've been well acquainted with for years that I've been using. Klahoya. K-L-A-H-O-W-Y-A. That means hello or goodbye. And a little bit about that, how can a word mean hello at the same time, goodbye? It carries within it the concept of trusting all is going well with you. So when I say hello, hi friend, I hope all is going well with you, that's the concept in it, but it's just hello or greetings or welcome. So if I'm bidding goodbye, I'm saying goodbye, I hope all goes well with you as you leave. So what it's doing, Klahalia is greeting and welcoming you or saying goodbye, but with the wishes for your best. Okay, the next word is cloche. K-L-O-S-E. K-L-O-S-H-E. K-L-O-S-H-E. This is probably one that you'll use more than almost any of the others I've used here so far, or amongst the most. It is meaning good, good. When I said to Rainbow earlier, Micah Close Klutschman, good woman, good, close, good. And we use that word good an awful lot in our language and we talk. So you'll find it's very, a very useful word. The next one is COPA. K-O-P-A. COPA. COPA means at, near, by, in. To give you an idea of its use, if you've ever been out to Highway 16 going up to Poulsbowl, Bremerton in that country, as you're going up near Gig Harbor, you will see a sign on the road pointing out into the Key Peninsula, and it says, Copa Chuck State Park. Oh, Copa Chuck. The word that's actually put on the sign like it's one word. But in the Indian language, it's two words that they've compounded the English into one word. Copa means in, that, nearby, and Chuck is water. For living there in Centrae, you have the Skookumchuck River. Those are two words made one, Skookumchuck. From this very language you're learning right now. It's an Indian name. Chuck is water. Chuck is water. Skookum is powerful, strong. Powerful water, strong water. That's what Skookumchuck means. But Copachuck, as we're putting the word Copa in here, is the state park is at, near, or by the water. What is interesting is that long before white men came, and when the white men first arrived here, that was the place where that park is today, is a place where Indian tribes over there on the Olympic Peninsula many times would have great powwows at that place. And one Indian might say to the other, see you next sun at Copachuck. Oh, Copachuck. That was at the place nearby the water.
Wow.
So here I'm giving you some words that you use all that we have right on our signboards, a name of a river, a name of a state park, and they're from this very language. Copa, in the water from.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
That's perfect, Grandfather. Perfect.
Thank you. I'll give you some ideas how it's used. There he is. Well, the next word.
Let's go with one more, Grandfather, and then pick up the rest of them next week. How about that?
Okay, that'll be fine.
Will that work? Okay, let's do the last one.
This week, between now and Thursday and throughout the week, and all every day, just read this list of 22 words once every day, and all of a sudden you'll find that you have them memorized. I'll give you one more. And this one is Kumtux. K-U-M, as in mother, T-U-X. Kumtux. This means to know or knowledge. If I were to say, using two pronouns I've already taught you, Nika Kumtux, Micah. Now, those are, now that you've got this word Kumtux, you've got a phrase. Nika Kumtux, Micah. I know you. I know you. So you're going to find learning these 22 most commonly used words. They can just put together with pronouns and verbs and so forth and give you sentences, phrases, and you'll be able to talk to each other. Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. That was awesome. And thank you, Rainbow. So
I want to say that Kumtux also means understand.
Understand.
I understand you.
Okay.
Because I know you is like, I know who you are.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody's speaking and you're agreeing, you can say, Saika Kumtux, I understand.
Saika Kumtux. Oh, excellent. Thank you for that input. Right. Really appreciate that.
And then also, I was wondering, because people do drop in and out and miss words, do you have the ability to put on your website the words that we've learned?
I think that's a Tom question.
Pronunciation. How does that go?
Rainbow?
Tom? Uh-huh. I see Tom. Him nodding his head. You're muted, Tom.
They are filming this whole thing, both the legends and the language.
But Rainbow, I think your idea is a good one, and we will probably create a slide that we could put up either during or after the program so that they'll all be written out for you.
Right. So people can go back to the first lessons or whatever too. Mm-hmm. And,
exactly. Yeah. Okay. I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah,
and
I'll
add that in.
Tom, I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have
one other thing I might say.
One more thing.
You may be interested in having this book.
Yeah.
Everything I'm teaching you is in this book that I wrote on this language. And I want to make a real special deal to you few that are in this class group. And if you go to Book and Brush in Chehalis, there you can get it there for $26.95 plus sales tax, about $29. Rainbow knows that I have been selling it to my students at a discount of $20. I'm going to put it right down to my cost of publication, $15 just for you. Nobody else has ever gotten it for only $15. So it's a big book and has all of this in it, and you may be interested in that. And if you are, just come on down here and you can get one.
Okay, excellent. Okay,
it's 448 pages.
Lots of
Wow.
It's a big book. It's a big book.
Wow, so I'm going to get mine.
How many
do
you have left, Grandfather? Because I took quite a few of them.
How many do you have left, Grandfather?
How's that? How
many books do you have left? Rainbow thinks she might have taken most of them.
Oh, I've probably got 50 or 60 or 70 of them.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So we're good.
I don't
there.
Know. I haven't counted them. No, probably maybe about 45 to 50, actually, probably. I guess I'd have to go count them, but I carried a large supply of all my books that I've written.
Okay. So let's wrap up. We all have a history. We all have stories. And I have heard some of Grandfather's. I think I'm going to be able to hear some of Hildy's. You all have stories, and I have the time right now, and I would love to hear them. So get your stories together, get them out there, and let's get together on Zoom and hear them. So thank you guys for coming. Let's open up the mics and just chat for a while.
Okay, I'm going to slip out and go down to my show. I'll say night-night.
Okay.
Thank you, Grandfather.
Bye.
I gotta go. I'll see you guys later. I'll see you Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.